Well, Henry, congratulations, first of all, on finding the bottle.
Yeah. It's quite extraordinary. It must have come up on the Gulf Stream.
Can you describe what you were doing on Sunday morning when you discovered the bottle?
Yeah, I'd been putting feed blocks out to the sheep, and it was a beautiful day, so I thought I'd go along the beaches and have a look and pick up plastic bottles and rope and all the plastic rubbish that gets washed up. And I just came across this glass bottle, and I saw, oh, there's a message in there. So I took it home and opened it up, and this message from 2600.
Was this the first message in a bottle you've ever found?
No, I found one some years ago. A lad from Newcastle-on-Tyne had been on a holiday in Orkney, and he'd dropped it in the ocean, and it washed up in more or less the same place. But I wrote to them, but never heard anything back from them.
Was that further away than where we dropped our bottle?
Oh, no. Newcastle-on-Tyne is just south of Edinburgh, you know, about 50 or 60 miles south of Edinburgh.
Wow, so this is not the first time you found one. Is trash and other bottles like this, is that a phenomena that's always has always been occurring there on the shoreline?
We get quite a lot of rubbish coming ashore. It seems to come from all over the world. A lot from Scandinavia, a lot from the Caribbean, a lot of shotgun cartridges, spent ones. Probably from the cruise liners doing shooting on board. We get a lot of rubbish. In Shetland, we have what we call the Vore Red Up. It's the spring cleanup. But it's easier for me to go around every week or 10 days and gather up, and then it's not such a big job in the spring.
Has waste like this been more of a problem, would you say, or is it improving at all?
No, it hasn't changed very much over the years. There are teams of volunteers go around the shores of Shetland every spring, and they probably gather about 80 tons of rubbish. But I prefer to go and collect on a more regular basis, and it's a lot easier for me to do that. I'll get two or three bags of rubbish a week.
I still can't get over the shotgun shells you're finding. They do that on ocean liners or cruises, you said?
Yeah, I think they do clay pigeon shooting off the back of ocean liners. And so we get a lot of shotgun cartridges coming up and, the inserts and so on. We get toothbrushes, we get shoes, we get Wellington boots, all sorts of rope, nets, pallets, everything. Nothing surprises me anymore.
What would you say is the most unusual thing you found?
Oh, heavens. I don't think there's been anything unusual, but it is quite exciting to find a message in a bottle, and this is the second one I found. I've been up here for 50 years now, and, in all that time I only found two messages.
And what condition was the bottle in when you found it?
Oh, perfect. I mean, it wasn't broken at all. And in fact, it's all packed up, ready to send back to you. I just have to go to the post office and find out how much it's going to cost to send it. But it's not very heavy. But the top was intact, and so the message was dry. And I've returned the letter and the envelope so you can see what like it is.
Well, just make sure that it's packed nice and firmly. We don't want it to break on its second voyage across the Atlantic Ocean.
If it survived a year and a month in the sea, I think it'll arrive back in New York in one piece.
Well, you don't know our postal service, but fingers crossed.
You say you live there for 50 years. Are you from there?
I was born in North London, raised in Ireland, and I traveled around the world back in the 60s. I was in America for 6.5 months, 7 months, and they tried to send me to Vietnam. I didn't particularly want to go there, so I went to New Zealand instead, and then I came home eventually.
What kind of work were you doing? Were you in?
I was on farm work all the time. I did 2 years at agricultural college, down in England. And then I inherited an island in Shetland, 1969. So that's what brought me up here.
You inherited an island?
Yeah, 750-acre island with a Scottish baronial-style mansion house on it. And well, you know, it was 100 years on. It was built by my great-uncle. He was in the wool business back in Yorkshire, and this was his holiday residence for the summer. And so it was a big mansion house, and I couldn't afford to keep it. So I put the place on the market. It took me 13 years to find a customer. And so they bought it 23, 4 years ago.
So you ended up settling in Shetland there. Are there a lot of other residents, and what's life like there?
Oh, well, we think it's lovely. There's a population of about 23,000. We're a pretty tight-knit community. There's main industry is aquaculture, fishing, oil, of course, farming, crafting, knitting, all those kind of things.
Can you tell us just a little bit more about the beaches and the landscape there, where you live and the community?
Yeah, it's all pretty wild and rugged. Most people who come here really enjoy it. It's a bonus, of course, if they get good weather. In the wintertime, we get a lot of wind and rain, so that can be quite taxing on the soul. But for the most part, you know, the summers are wonderful. We have 24 hours of daylight, and so that's great. But, of course, in the winter, we only have about 8 hours of daylight, so... it can be pretty dark, and especially if it's wet and overcast, then it can, you know, be a bit depressing. But we just get on with it and do what we have to do.
What would you say your favorite part of life is there, personally?
Oh, for the most part, where I am, the peace and quiet. You know, there's if we drive into the main town, which is about 35, 40 minutes away, you know, if you pass half a dozen cars on your way in, it's busy today. But, of course, as you get closer to Lerwick, it's it gets a bit, you know, a bit more traffic.
Lerwick is the main town?
Lerwick is the main town, yeah. Have you looked at Shetland on the map?
Yeah, we took a look at the map and are learning quite a bit.
Yeah.
When you're not helping clean up, what kinds of things do you do for fun or hobbies?
Well, I'm retired now, so I'll be 77 in August. So, no, we'd do a bit of socializing. There's always something going on in the local village, and we've just had our big fire festival called Up Heliar. You should put that into Google and see. That's the biggest fire festival in Europe. And it's supposed to be an old Viking tradition, welcoming back the longer daylight hours. Probably stems from celebrating the end of the winter solstice. But it's always the last Tuesday in January, and it's become internationally known now. And we get people from all over the world coming to visit it.
Well, Henry, when we toss the bottle into the ocean, we offer to whoever found it a $1,000 reward. What will you be spending your $1,000 on?
Well, I've just acquired one of these old-fashioned red telephone kiosks from British Telecom. Because of the improvements in the mobile network, nobody is using these telephone boxes anymore. So they've taken out the equipment, and we've bought the box, but we're going to have to spend about £3,000 on restoring it because it lost its door in a gale 2 winters ago. So we have to buy a new door, which is £1,000, and then we have to buy new stuff to go inside to support the windows and so on, and then we have to paint it up, and hopefully we'll get onto that in the summer.
You know, we publish a magazine that features payphones and payphone kiosks, so the odds of somebody finding our bottle who is also into that are simply astronomical.
Yeah. What is this phone box kiosks in the States, or?
Well, there are some. There's one in Port Jefferson, and I think the one you sent us a picture of actually looks in better shape than that one. So maybe they need to spend some money and fix that one up. But we also, we own a phone booth of our own from the 1950s in America. So that's pretty incredible. Your phone kiosk, though, is still in use, is it not?
No, no, it's out of use now.
I see. Yeah,
the BT came and took the telephone equipment out about a month, 6 weeks ago. And they've cut the power off, and we're not allowed to use it for telecommunications. There was a 12-page document that came with it.
Well, ours was a wood model for indoor use, and it unfortunately, it still has the inner workings and the telephone, of course, but not connected. I understand those are very, very heavy, and it's on a concrete pad, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, some people have asked me if I was going to move it, and I said, no, it's been there since 1950, and I want to leave it there, because, you know, it's a sort of a landmark. People give directions by it, you know, so pass the phone box, it's on the left.
Wow.
And, of course, you don't expect to see a phone box in the middle of nowhere. But it was used extensively in the 50s and 60s and early 70s, and then everybody started to get telephones in their houses, and now, of course, everybody's got mobiles.
Well, people walking around, perhaps using their mobile phones, could use this box you have in a refurbished form to at least have shelter while they're talking on their mobile phones.
Exactly. Yeah. But the first job is to try and track down a door. There is a company that supplies spare parts for these kiosks. But a new door is £1,000, and we're going to try and do some crowdfunding and see if we can raise some money to help pay for it. But $1,000 will go a long way towards helping it. Yeah.
Well, $1,000 just literally showed up on your shoreline, so we're happy. We're so happy to have played a part in that. And of course, we also said we donate another $1,000 to a cause of your choice, and you picked the Ocean Cleanup Campaign. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, only that I've seen it on television, and, it's something that's pretty close to my heart. I personally don't see plastic as the main problem. The main problem is people can't dispose of it properly, and so it winds up in the rivers and the waterways and then out to sea and so on. And of course, it's just devastating wildlife out there, and it's not a good scenario.
Yeah, this is an example of just how connected all of these different habitats and systems are. Given that you can send a message and get it across the ocean, and someone will find it. So that is an incredible cause, and we're all too happy to contribute. One last question. We're awful fascinated by having made contact, and probably will have a visit to see your part of the world. Is there a good pub or part of town? We'd love to make the visit and see what life's like there.
Well, there's a guest house next door to us. We run a very small bed and breakfast here. We have a camping body. It's in one of those pictures I sent you. That sleeps 2 to 3 people. It's got all the facilities you need. We take water out, and we take fuel for the stove out, and there's a little gas stove and so on. But there's hotels in town, and there's hotels in Scalloway, and there's all sorts of bed and breakfast places around. So yeah, it's not difficult to find accommodation.
Well, Henry Anderton, thank you so much for finding our bottle and for the work that you do, and just for being a real amazing representative of Shetland, the place that we certainly want to learn more about.
Well, if you ever come to Shetland, please be sure and come and see us.
We will do that. Thank you again.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.